Okay, so we're on page 137, because I'm going to go back to that paragraph again. Paragraph 229 on the shofar. In consonance, therefore, that means it works together, with our spiritual thoughts and deeds called into being at Rosh Hashanah, which is really the creation of humanity, of Adam, with spiritual thoughts and deeds. The initial tkiyah, because that's what Rosh Hashanah is kind of marking, right? I mean, it's the Yom HaDin, but it's the anniversary of the creation of Adam as Vayipach Ba'apav Ruach Chaim. So in consonance, therefore, with our spiritual thoughts and deeds called into being at Rosh Hashanah, the initial tkiyah signifies introspection and arising above ourselves, the teruah, a purification of ourselves, and the final tkiyah, a determination to follow a more righteous future. So that's a review of the previous two paragraphs, or three paragraphs, only adding the bit about the Rosh Hashanah as the creation of the human being, whose spiritual thoughts and deeds were created on Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, it is fitting that that's the day when our spiritual thoughts and deeds should be assessed. So how's it going with those thoughts and deeds? Right? The rest of it is like, you know, what it is. Like the action of eating or the action of walking or breathing, that's whatever it is. But the thoughts and the deeds in the sense that they are connected, that's bechira. So how's it going? How's the bechira doing? Thus they correspond to tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. Tshuva to the first tkiyah, tefillah to the teruah, tzedakah to the tkiyah. I feel like we spent time on that already last week, which our sages declare are the rich harvest of the Rosh Hashanah day. And I also thought that line was interesting. I don't think I said this last time. Because of harvesting. What's harvesting? It's not planting. Harvesting is when you pick the fruit. You have the benefit of all the labor you did before, and now you could enjoy it. So harvesting is work, right? Like when it's time for the harvest, you ever read like Little House on the Prairie books? If not, then I have to say I actually recommend them, because basically everything I know about agriculture is from Little House on the Prairie. And it's really helpful if you want to understand a lot of things in halacha about agriculture, because otherwise it's just a little difficult. So when it's harvest time, everything's, you got to wait till the fruit's really ripe. And then you got to harvest, and you have to harvest fast. And it's like usually summertime, and you're harvesting from when the sun comes up or even before until night, and the days are very long. And that's because you've got to be fast, because if it rains, once it's ripe, the food will spoil because it will get moldy.
Why would it rain in the summer?
Well, in California, it doesn't. But if you want to have a place where you could have like good crops of wheat and grains and things like that, you actually need rain while they're growing. So like in Eretz Yisrael, for example, they don't have so much of a summer crop of wheat. They have a winter crop and a spring crop because you have to have rain. I mean, or a lot of irrigation, but that's expensive. Okay. So why are we saying that? All the work, harvest. You have to have the rich harvest of the Rosh Hashanah day. That means on Rosh Hashanah, yes, it is work to harvest, but the kind of work that you do in a harvest is work that is extremely satisfying, because it's your chance to have the pleasure of the thing that you worked so hard on and didn't know how it was going to come out. So for months before, you're preparing the ground and you're removing the rocks and you're plowing it and making sure everything is like fine and loose so things can grow. And then you go through and you make the furrows, right? So you make like the lines between and the mounds. And then you go through and you plant all the things in the rows, all the seeds in the rows. And then you're going to come through later on and you're going to hoe around it and make sure that they're loose. And you're watering it if there isn't enough rain. And then you're going to come through and you're going to pull up the weeds so they don't choke back the things you're trying to grow until they get strong enough to make it on their own. And this is like for months. And you know, and if there's a frost, it might kill it. And if there's too much rain, it will like flood out the crop. And if there's not enough rain, then it'll dry out the crop. And if there's hail, that'll wipe it out entirely, right? You just don't know if you're going to be successful with that crop. And then it's time to harvest. And every single piece of the avoda of the harvesting is a satisfaction because you're getting it. You know, it's sort of like saying, like, you earned all this money and now you have to take it out of the cash register and put it in the deposit envelope. Like, yeah, it is a job. It's like a thing on your to-do list once it's the end of the day or the end of the week in your store. But that's the good part of the job. That's like where you're like, yeah, we did it. Okay, we got it. We have something to work with. That's, when he's picking the words to say, the sages declare that tshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah are the harvest of the Rosh Hashanah day. That means it's work. It's an avoda. But it means that that's the, it's not that you're doing tshuva at the end of like some tshuva process you would achieve. I think maybe what he's trying to clarify, let's say you say to me, well, you have to do tshuva. Why you have to do tshuva? Well, because I did bad things. I did things wrong. I did, you know, I embarrassed somebody in public. Yeah, this just happened to me. It's not very in public, but in a group. And I said something to somebody that was contradicting them. That's actually could be embarrassing. You know what I'm saying? Like saying like, no, like I don't agree with you. Like you're wrong in front of other people. So now like either like people are going to think they're really wrong or like whatever. I mean, really, I'm embarrassing myself because it's like a rude thing to do. But it could embarrass the other person, right? So I apologize. And Baruch Hashem, I was forgiven. But you could embarrass somebody, right? So now I have to do tshuva. Why do I have to do tshuva? Because I did something bad. And now, first of all, there's somebody else. I have to clear that up, right? I have to ask forgiveness and be mefayis them and hope I'll get forgiveness. But I still didn't finish doing tshuva at that point. Right? That's just the, like, prerequisite. Then you do the tshuva. I have to admit that I did something wrong. And I have to think about, like, what caused that to be that way. What is it inside of me that made me, like, say something like that? And then how badly do I feel about it? That's embarrassing. Really, it is embarrassing for me. And then what could I do to try and make sure it won't happen again? So all of that is the tshuva part, right? The vidui and the charata and aziva sachet and kabbalah la'asid. And all of that in my mind is so that I won't do stuff like that again. So I'll be better in the future than I was now. But there's another thing about tshuva. There's a mitzvah of tshuva. You have to do tshuva. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. In which case, the doing of the tshuva is itself the thing that is the result. Yeah? If I do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah, or in Aseres Yemei Tshuva, or, right? If I do tshuva, and I didn't yet get tested, right? I didn't have the same situation come up again. So I don't know if I'm any better. It's even possible that I'm not better, that I didn't really manage to. As you get older, you start to notice that your list of things to fix in El looks a lot like the list of things you needed to fix 2 years ago and 5 years ago. 10 years ago. I don't remember specifically when I was 18 noticing that, but the older I got, sometimes after that point, you start to notice that sometimes things will stick around for a really long time. And maybe you need a new way to tackle it, or maybe it's because it's a fundamental midah and it's not so easy to change your midah and it might take time to chip away at it and improve in it, but whatever it is, right? But I don't know then that it changed. If my list is the same as it was 10 years ago. But on Yom Kippur or on Rosh Hashanah, I did tshuva. I really did. As best as I knew how at that moment. I did the mitzvah. Meaning I have a harvest of the day. The harvest is the tshuva itself also. And the tefillah itself, where the tefillah, okay, he defined the tefillah. I think he's going to define it again also afterward. On the inner, letting the newly gained conception of God permeate the whole of your inner and outer life, right? Like, he talks about tefillah, he defines it as inner divine service, as opposed to the actions you do on the outside of your body. The tefillah is avodah shebalev. It's an avodah on the inside of you, right? So that is something that happens on the inside of you. And the tzedakah, which you could commit to in the process of Asar Simei Tshuva, whether it's tzedakah in money or tzedakah in deed and action that you do for other people. Those are the harvest of Rosh Hashanah Day, and to think of them as a rich harvest, meaning as something very wonderful to have achieved and performed and created on those days of Asar Simei Tshuva, it sets a whole new kind of target for yourself and a whole new kind of satisfaction. One of the things that I really, really gained from working professionally was the idea that you need to know what your goal is. You have to know what your objective is. You have to know your long-term goal and your business. What are you there? What, trying to do what? Get a product manufactured, distributed, and out to sale? Like, what is it you're trying to do? Trying to educate kids? What does that mean? What would you have to teach them by what time? Like, for that to be considered, you gotta know, what are you trying to do? What's the definition of success? But you also have to know in the immediate term, okay, so I break that whole project down into 100 or 200 or 300 stages. So now I need to pick up the phone and call somebody. What's the purpose of the phone call? What's the purpose? This is the difference between a professional and an amateur, I'll tell you now. Rather than just randomly calling people and schmoozing with them, is calling them and knowing what you're hoping you'll get out of it. A meeting? If you're hoping you'll get a meeting, you don't waste time on the phone call trying to sell something. You're just trying to get them willing to hear you to have the meeting, right? You're sending an email. You're trying to get the phone call, or you're trying to get the sale. Like, what are you trying to achieve in it? Know what you're trying to do. You're trying to set a meeting? Just set the meeting, okay? Every time, you want to be focused. So if you know, my goal at this moment is that I should do tshuva. My avoda of this moment is that I should have tefillah, achieve tefillah. It helps a lot. Because then you know, did I do it or did I not do it? That's very helpful. Even more helpful than knowing you did do it sometimes is knowing you didn't. If you don't know, then you're just drifting, right? You come to shul and you hope that something that happens all around you will take you where you needed to go. Like, maybe if the person next to you is crying, that will also help you feel like a hisorus, that there's something serious going on, and you'll also get emotional. And the Baal Tefillah will, like, say things in a way, and that'll help you focus on it. So it could be that will happen, but you're just drifting. You're not really, you don't know what you're trying to accomplish. If you know what you're trying to accomplish, you could have a sense of accomplishment that you did it. Which helps you look forward to the Yontif. It's true on Rosh Hashanah, it's especially true Yom Kippur. We're not talking about really about Yom Kippur, but if you think about this whole Asar Simei Tshuva, Yom Kippur is a particularly difficult day to know what you're trying to achieve, and it's really easy to not look forward to Yom Kippur. Because it's a lot of fasting, and it's a lot of time in shul, and the more someone isn't familiar with the davening, the longer the machzor is. Do you ever remember being like 5 years old or 7 years old, right? And you're like counting. Oh my gosh, there's like 672 pages of the article machzor. And you're like on page 300 and you're flipping through and you realize it's not like the sitter. Like, you actually have to go through every page till you get to the end. You know, with the sitter, it's like chakras. Like, the sitter's really long, but like, okay, like.
And you skip a period, you're like,
right. It's like, oh, some communities go straight to the next page. You get to where it's like, oh, it's Shabbos. We don't say if you don't walk in or something. But like, it's Yom Kippur. It's just going to last as long as it lasts anyway. It's not even like anyone stops davening. So. Okay. So it's nice, though, as if you could grow up past that. I mean, I'm sure the people I'm talking to right here have already well grown past that. But we could remember it from when we're young. And I think most people could still remember the feeling of a little bit dreading Yom Kippur, if only because of the fasting. It's like a lot, you know? So, if you know instead what you're hoping to achieve, then you could start to look forward to it. I mean, it's not just what you aren't going to do, but what you are going to do, and that you could achieve it. It is by the characteristics peculiar to the tones which evoke in you spiritual thinking and acting before God. Okay, so what's the tones which evoke in you spiritual thinking and acting before God? That's the shofar. Which is an interesting definition of the kol shofar. It's a tone which evokes in you spiritual thinking and acting. before God. It is by these characteristics, or rather, it is by the special characteristics by which God evokes in you spiritual thinking and acting, that you are summoned before your master by Tekiah. Tekiah calls you. It's Hashem calling you. We aren't at Har Sinai now. Difficult for us to directly hear the Kol Hashem calling to us, but he does call to us through the Kol Shofar. Appearing before him, meaning you appear before Hashem, Hashem as your ruler, and the ruler of the whole world. That's the aspect of Malchus, right? Hamlocha, which is a big aspect of the Avodah on Rosh Hashanah. That you receive a call to self-purification by Teruah, to sit in judgment upon yourself before God the Judge. For it would indeed be meaningless to submit yourself to trial before God, under the God idea, unless in actual fact God were not only God of the heavens above, but also of the earth beneath. It's not such an unusual thing that people feel like, yes, there is a God, but they don't actually think that he cares much about what they're doing. Sort of God in the heavens, but not on the earth below. Yeah? Which is not our understanding of Hashem's involvement. If not only did God's eye encompass the whole universe, but he let his eye rest also upon each and every one of the inhabitants of the world, testing them and judging them. It's so obvious to us because we've maybe grown up with this idea. But it's a really, really critical concept that there's Hashgacha Pratis, that Hashem pays attention to every single person and cares about what they do and think. That matters. If you don't think that, then it's a little bit absurd to sort of be submitting yourself to Hashem's justice. It wouldn't make sense. By your very sitting in judgment upon yourself, you declare God to be your judge. Because you're judging yourself, that means, why are you judging yourself? Because it really matters whether you are following Hashem's commandments. Why? Because it really matters, because he cares. So if I'm judging myself, if I'm sitting in self-judgment on Rosh Hashanah, that itself is a hamlachas Hashem. It says, I recognize that Hashem is the king of the universe and pays attention from the greatest aspects of the universe down to every tiny detail within. He is the king, ein od milvado. He's the king. That's a kind of hamlacha through the mitzvah of self-judgment of Rosh Hashanah. Verily, is it not God who indeed sits in judgment upon you through the voice which you hear in your inner self, or rather through the voice which represents your better self? I think that's like a little too intense for me to try and explain. The final tekiah, well, let me point out one thing about by the very sitting in judgment upon yourself, you declare God to be your judge. So you might remember last year when we came into Rosh Hashanah, I told this story, true story, that I was in shul, and you know, you have all the Lam Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmors, you say seven times before Tekiyas HaShofar. So that gives a certain amount of time to both be saying the Lam Natzeach and also to be sort of mentally thinking that the shofar is about to happen. And I was mentally thinking about, like, my goodness, is that how you come to shul dressed in clothes like that? Like, really? Like, that's Rosh Hashanah, you know? And the tzniyas. And the person who brought the little baby who's, like, making all little noises, you know? So how could anybody, like, focus on the davening? And the person who sings a little too loud considering that, like, she's on the women's side. And, like, you know, like a little decorum, please, in the shul. And I thought, my goodness, I think I'm the judge. It's Yom HaDin, I think I'm the judge. That's scary. That's wrong. I'm not the judge. I want to be judged with all these people. And I want to be judged with them. Because I have a lot of flaws, and those people have a lot of very good things about them. You know, that person that I'm criticizing for one thing, they're also unbelievably patient and an amazing mother. And this other person that I'm in my head judging about some other thing, well, they are like a balas tshuva who strove and made so many changes in their life. Like, I could only daven that I could be able to make so much kind of change in my own life. right? And this other, everyone, there's like so much I could respect in them. And if I'll just be judged on my own, that's scary. It would be much better for me to be seen as part of this group, right? And you put us all together and we'll have like a lot of good qualities together and help compensate for each other. It would be a much happier situation. So by sitting in judgment on yourself, you declare God to be your judge. It's really much healthier to sit in judgment on yourself than to be sitting in judgment on other people, basically. Okay. He didn't say that by sitting in judgment on other people, you declare God to be the judge. Yeah. All right. The final tkiah reassembles your exhausted spirit and, as it were, leads you back to a unified, straight, and upright life. You hear how he combined together. I'm sorry, I just want to get the air on. It's like really hot. You hear how he made it now one and the same. The sound of the shofar is unified, straight, and upright. The sound of the tkiah, right? And the sound of, and the avoda that it calls you to is also the same, unified, straight, and upright. Yeah?
Sorry.
The final tkiah reassembles your exhausted spirit and leads you back to a unified, straight, and upright life. It's a unified, straight, and upright sound, tkiah. And the feeling that it leads you to is a feeling of living unified, straight, and upright. It is God who calls upon you to follow him along the path he has set for you. He unshackles you from the bonds of the past and strengthens you and raises you up and wishes to guide you. Okay, the bonds of the past are often what stop us from making progress forward. There are so many types. Like, I'm trying to think even the ones I've come across recently. Baruch Hashem, not my own. If I could see my own bonds of the past, I could probably do some work on them. But, for example, somebody who felt they could never be good enough for their grandfather's judgment. Meant a lot to their grandfather to have children and descendants and grandchildren. They were a Holocaust survivor. And she never felt she could really be good enough. Well, that could lead to that crimp, that quirk in thinking and feeling leads to like a little bit of twist in decisions. Because if you think you can never be good enough, the things you're going to choose, you might not always choose good enough. Right? Because like you're never going to really choose right, well enough anyway. And you could carry around a certain burden of trying to always prove you're good enough for that person. It's a starting point to try and live up to your parents' standards, but not always are our parents' values exactly perfectly correct. I'm saying with all good intention, like, sometimes there's a greater perfection than that or a more correct way for you yourself to be developing. So there's a lot of times, it could be from our parents. It doesn't only have to be from our parents. It could be habits that we have that are bonds of the past, commitments. Well, I said I would do it that way, so I kind of have to keep doing it that way, even though I never should have done it, maybe. You could have things in the past where you talked yourself into it, so your pride doesn't let you change what you're doing. Because, like, you made such a big fuss about how this was the way you're going to do it, even though other people told you not to. So now, like, how would you back out of it? You've talked yourself into a corner. Maybe you've tried and tried and tried in some area, and you never succeeded. So you're reluctant to try that again because that's really discouraging, right? There's a lot of things that are bonds of the past. That second tkiah unshackles you. It loosens up and unlocks the handcuffs of the bonds of the past. And at the same time, strengthens you and raises you up and wishes to guide you. So that second tkiah, remember we talked about, is asid. It's the future. It takes you forward. It says, You're in the past because you're thinking about what you've done wrong, and now we're going to leave that and go forward to the future. It's a little bit like Sur Meirah Ve'aseh Tov, right? So with the tshuva, you start with the hove. Sur Meirah would be leaving what was the past, and Aseh Tov, and go to the future. Right? At some point, you drop your sumrei ra, you're leaving the bad, you drop that also, in a way. Like, you stop dwelling on what was the past and how wrong it was. You have to think about it. You have to assess it. But that's going to pull you down. And then the second tekiah comes and says, now let's go forward into a beautiful future. There's somewhere to go from here. You don't have to stay stuck in that problem and the efforts or the mistakes of the past. He is your father and teacher. These three aspects of the shofar tones are but as follows. Tekiah represents Malchuyos, right? Being called to judgment. Hashem is the king. Truah is Zichronos, looking back at the past. And Tekiah is Shofaros. And then he references us to check out Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, where he explains more about Malchuyos, Zichronos, and Shofaros. Thus, Tekiah becomes the summons of the master, Truah the summons of the judge, and the final Tekiah the summons of the father. Combined, they are summons of a master looking to a looking inwards and arising above ourselves, summons of the judge to self-examination, summons of the father to a renewal of one's life. Paragraph 230. The entire duty which devolves upon you at Rosh Hashanah, by the way, whatever he's going to say now is clearly very important. The entire duty which devolves upon you? That means, this is a very strong statement, that means there is one and only mission that you have to focus on Rosh Hashanah is to acknowledge anew in your heart that God is your master. That means he has the power to direct your life, your judge, and then he assesses how you're doing with your life, and your teacher. Teacher means that he directs you, more. Okay. More is a teacher, yeah? Or mora. That's like the lashon of Torah. It's related to yore. Yore is like driving rain or to shoot an arrow, right? Or shoot a gun. Which is also related to the word or. Or as light, yeah? But light is radiation, meaning it travels. It has trajectory, direction, and movement. Okay, so a teacher is someone who and with the driving rein of your rat, it's that it's trajectory or shooting an arrow. It's giving something the impelling force to give it a direction and progress and go in a direction. A more, a teacher, is someone who helps show you which way to go. They might have to give you musar or tochacha to help show you, like correct your path if your trajectory is not straight or not at the right angle. They also might have to give you information, like just the tools and skills of going forward. But that's the job of the teacher. So over here, Hashem is your master, your judge, and your teacher. And then he's going to explain your teacher who, like a father, because a father is really your main teacher, right? When we learned about chinuch, the whole thing of being a parent is that education of the children, yeah? So it's not the kind of teacher who's somebody who's a stranger to you, who sees you for 45 minutes twice a week, and their job is to somehow share some sort of information, and it's up to you to do something with it. It's the type of teacher who, like a father, rears you. That means raises you. And teaches you his law, even though you may have forgotten him in your life. A parent doesn't stop being your parent, even if you forget that you're their child. They don't stop caring about you. As Holy Writ tells us, I don't remember seeing that particular phrase here. Ki Hashem Shoftenu, Hashem Mechokekenu, Hashem Malkenu, Hu Yoshienu. For the Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, mechokek, like he engraves the chukim. The Lord is our king, he will save us. And therefore, each one of these three ideas must penetrate into your very soul in all their meaning and with full understanding. So, one way you could approach Rosh Hashanah is to just focus on that. That would be big. You could probably spend a few Rosh Hashanahs on that. Well, apparently you're supposed to spend every Rosh Hashanah on that. But sometimes we find that, you know, like different years, you learn like a different angle of how to achieve this goal. Give full thought to these ideas. 1. God, who is master of all, calls you as your master to test whether you have lived as his servant and to actuate you. That means like to activate you, push the button that starts you. To actuate you to live as his servant henceforth. Tzkia, trua, tzkia, in the sense of malchuyos. Okay, now what he's explaining is, we said there's tzkia, there's trua, and tzkia. That's three phases. But each of those is tripled. Because you have malchuyos with shofar blowing, zichronos with shofar blowing, and shofros with shofar blowing. Meaning each of those now has a tzkia, trua, tzkia. So now it's like a 3x3 matrix, right? Because you have tzkia, trua, tzkia. It's really, that is itself a triple matrix because you do it as tzkia, shvarim, trua, tzkia, shvarim, tzkia, trua. But that's a different thing, okay? So you have this threesome, and now each of that is going to be repeated three times, but each time is slightly different. You have slightly different feelings in the tzkia trua tzkia of malchuyos as in the tzkia trua tzkia of shofros, of zichronos, or the tzkia trua tzkia of zichronos. So that's what he's explaining now. So give full thought to these ideas, and now he's going to give us three ideas which sound familiar. Why? Because he's saying tzkia trua tzkia concept in terms of just the first tkia, that's number one. In terms of malchuyos. So this is number one. God who is master of all, because remember he said it's master like shaftenu, mechokekenu, malkenu. Like the, okay, so he's the melech. Okay, so that's first. He calls you as your master. What does that mean then, when he calls us as the master? Now it's going to be, that's the tkia, the first tkia of malchuyos. To test whether you have lived as his servant, that's the trua of malchuyos, and to actuate you to live as his servant henceforth, that's the second tkia of malchuyos. Tkia, trua, tkia, in the sense of malchuyos. Number two, God, who is the judge of all, is also your master. And as such, he calls to you, that's the first tkia, to test whether you have lived under his watchful eye, as it were. In other words, Hashem is the judge. So now he calls you as your judge. Then what gets tested? So in the test, what does he judge or test you on in the trua of Malchuyos? Whether, how well have you lived as the servant of Hashem? Because that's the context of him as your master. So then the judgment, maybe I haven't been his servant so well. I did what I wanted to do. I didn't wonder what he wanted me to do. But now, in the context of the Zichronos, that Hashem is the judge, he's the Dayan, he's the Shofet, so then in the Trua, he's testing, have I lived under his watchful eye? If Hashem is the one who's judging, and it means he's paying attention to everything that I do, and testing to see, is it good or bad? Am I in the right direction? Am I in the wrong direction? So did I live like that? Did I live my life as if Hashem is watching me and testing and judging what I'm going to do? What would my conversation be like in this conversation that I'm about to have for 10 minutes, some random day in Cheshvan, if at that moment I was thinking about Hashem watching me at that moment? That's testing whether you have lived under his watchful eye, yeah? How's it? Rabbi Goldberg had this wonderful line about stopping and thinking and doing something with the awareness that it's forever. Say or do something, being aware that that will be forever. That tefillah that you say, that bracha that you say, that conversation, that thing you're going to say to somebody, that action you're going to do will last forever. That is called living under God's watchful eye. Okay? That's what you then would be called to think about and assess within yourself, and Hashem is assessing with you, in the trua of the zichronos. And to induce you to live as under his eye henceforth. Meaning go forward with greater and more constant awareness of Shivisi Hashem Lanegdi Samad Hashem is in front of me. He is watching me. He is present at all times. Tkia, Trua, and Tkia in the sense of Zichronos. Number three, God who is teacher of all is also your master. And as such, he calls you. That's the first Tkia. Your master, your teacher is calling you. That's the voice of the first Tkia. That's what you hear, yeah? When you hear a Tkia, you're being called. Especially the first one, you're being called. The second Tkia, you're being sent off. Go forth with it, with what you've learned since I called you here. You got to learn quick because it's just the truth. But it's amazing how quick. There's no thoughts have almost infinite speed, Maharal says. Almost infinite speed. It's like the closest thing we could even relate to, like, the Hashem is completely not bound by time. You could spend a lot of time thinking about something, but the amount of time as you perceive it in your mind is not necessarily bound by the amount of time that's outside. You could have had that experience yourself where you were thinking about something and then you thought a lot of time passed and it was really just a minute, or you felt like just a moment passed and it was really like 10 minutes. Thoughts are almost instantaneous. They take almost no time. God, who is the teacher of all, is also your master, and as such he calls you to test, so here's going to be the trua of Shofros, to test whether you have lived in accordance with his Torah. Okay, so here's Torah as related to Moreh, Hashem is your teacher. Have you lived in accordance with his Torah? In other words, with his teaching you. That's what Torah means. It's teaching you. And have led your life in the measure of his teaching. So here, Hashem is my teacher. He wants to help me know how I could live my life right. Have I paid attention and listened to the teaching? And have I acted in accordance with what I have learned? That's that aspect. And to lead you in order that you will follow him from now on in the way which his Torah and his providence want to direct you. So now go forward with him leading, teaching you, going forward. That's kind of the Ananei HaKavod also there. That's Tkia Trua Tkia in the sense of Shofaros. Thus you have Tarat, Tkia Trua Tkia. That's a standard notation with the Resh is the Trua, since the Taf was already for Tkia. Yeah, you see it in Siddurin sometimes, or certain Machzers will use it. Thus you have, it says here, Tarat is the traditional abbreviation. There you go. Okay, you didn't need me for that. For Malchios, Tarat for Zichronos, and Tarat for Shofros. And the pattern of the Trua is as follows. Okay, so now we're going to address the fact that we have these Truos. The Truos are the part where we... are having the assessment of ourselves. And now he's stacked them all up. So you have Malchuyos, 1, Zichronos, 2, Shofros, 3. Corresponding to Tshuva, 1, Tfila, 2, Tzedakah, 3. Okay. It's hard to choose which of this to talk about for a minute. Okay. Let's look at Tshuva, Tefillah, Tzedakah a minute, because I feel like we didn't really talk about their close relationship so much with the pattern. Why is Tshuva the piece of the... If Tshuva, Tefillah, and Tzedakah are the rich harvest, meaning that's what you would achieve if you allowed yourself to tune in to the voice of the shofar as presented here. So if your heart and your mind are on the right frequency, In the olden days, we had radios where you turn a dial. Have you ever seen this in a car? You turn the dial to get to the station, and you're getting, I'm getting a blank look. We're going to need some new mashalim over here. I'm not like that. You've heard of a radio with a dial to a frequency.
Yeah, I think we still
have. Yeah, there might still be like some old fashioned
walkie-talkies where you like keep switching stations until you catch the one that someone else.
But the thing is with the walkie-talkies, a lot of them are digital, so it just jumps to that part of the spectrum. It doesn't go all the way through. The thing with a dial is that it goes all the way. Yes, we could bring in an example and show it. That's right. We have like an earthquake radio that you like pump it with your hand to give it energy, like just in case, you know, there were no power. Okay. It's somewhere in a drawer in the laundry room.
Really? My parents have one like that really too. Cool. It's like the
Yeah, and it has like a flashlight in the front. It's like a whole full emergency kit.
I don't know that they might.
Okay. So the way that it works is depending on the frequency that it's tuned into, it will pick up that frequency that's being transmitted from some radio station antenna tower somewhere around town in the good old days where they had them. Now it's probably just satellites bouncing around. Okay. So as you turn the dial, you see this, like the marker, work its way up. As you get closer to a station's frequency, you'll start to hear the sound of it, but it's not very clear. And it gets clearer and clearer and clearer until you hit exactly the frequency they're broadcasting on. And then it kind of fades away. If you would keep going, it gets like more choppy and hard to hear, and then it fades away, and then there might just be empty static for a while till you approach the next station. Okay, I'm explaining this. Because to the extent that we're tuned in to the frequency of the call of the shofar, the message will be received more clearly in us. Okay? The message is perfectly transmitted from the radio tower when it comes to the shofar. No matter how the Baal Tokeya blows. As long as it's kosher, the frequency's right. If there's any fuzziness or lack of clarity or lack of reception, it's just because our tuner is not perfectly tuned.
Or there might be maggots on the
shoulder.
Shrek, that was gross.
Don't cry.
I managed to forget that.
I didn't.
Can you imagine being the Baal Tokeya who discovers this afterward? No. Let me just tell you.
No.
It was sad. Yeah, anyway. Did we decide it puzzled it? I don't think it puzzled it.
What?
I don't think it puzzled it.
I think, right.
It just sort of like totally disgusted and grossed out the Baal Tokeya, but like that's another problem.
There's a lot of extra chauffeurs just like lying around.
I know. This house is well stocked. Yeah. Anyway, what were we saying? Tshuva Tefila Tzedakah is the rich harvest.
For the Tzedakah? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to like with these three. Okay. So if you're tuned in correctly at Malchuyos, meaning you receive and you're like all vibrating in consonance with this message, Hashem, who is master of all, calls as your master to test whether you've lived as a servant and actuate you to live as a servant henceforth. That's tshuva, meaning that the result, if in fact you are actuated to live as his servant, therefore, that means tshuva, like I went back to the right path. I was off track in some way, and I'm back on track. So I am living as a servant. I regret what I did wrong. I feel bad about it because he's my master, and whatever is his will is what I want to be my will. So that's the result is that I've done tshuva. Yeah? It's an avoda, but like the result is that, yes, I did tshuva. With zichronos, that's tefillah, because Hashem, who is the judge of all, is also your master, and as such, he calls you to test whether you've lived under his watchful eye, as it were. And what's the result, like the going forth that you're charged out with to induce you to live as under his eye henceforth, living your life with a sense of hashkacha pratis, with awareness, with yirah shamayim, yeah? That's tefillah. Why? Because lehit palel means to judge yourself. An awareness that I need to be assessing how I'm doing, that I'm living under a watchful eye. Tefillah is an awareness that I'm living under a watchful eye, that there's somebody there. That's why I'm talking to him. But it's also a process of, okay, we do not have time to talk about what's the purpose of this phone call when the phone call is tefillah. when the conversation you're about to start is Shacharis. That's not time for that now. But one of the things that you do in davening is you like realign, you know, imagine like you're kind of hanging off the end of the chair and you're, you know, but things will start to hurt. In davening, you like, you get everything lined back up again. Where, what are you lining up with? Like, what's the alignment you're matching? Is the avoda of the Beis HaMikdash, which is an avoda of bringing ourselves to be fully dedicated to avodas Hashem. And then you take that into your day. So you get yourself all like aligned with that, and then you go off and you have the rest of your day, and it's better aligned with avodas Hashem. Not just like random stuff you're doing, but now each of the things you're doing during the day is part of your avodas Hashem. That alignment happens three times a day as you daven. You kind of line yourself back up with it. Okay, so that is tefillah. That's like awareness that Hashem is watching and assessing how I'm doing and judging that. And it's lehit palel, is I myself am aware and assessing and judging that. Okay, and tzedakah on the shofros, here's what I think if we look. Hashem is the teacher of all, is also your master, and he calls you to test whether you have lived in accordance with his Torah and have led your life in the measure of his teaching, and to lead you in order that you will follow him from now on in the way in which his Torah and his providence want to direct you. Mahu afata. If you are following in Hashem's way, if you're following him, then what you're going to see is tzedakah. Ki im asos chesed, asos mishpat, and avas chesed, like that is tzedakah, right? It's tzedek, it's just, and it's chesed, it's giving. That is, I think, the outcome of the awareness that I am following Hashem, right? I'm following all whatever the direction is the Torah takes me, but in particular, you're going to see that it's going to come out in behavior that is tzedakah and tzedek. Okay. Hashem is king. So, the Malchuyos, Tkia, Trua, Tkia. Hashem is judge, Tkia, Trua, Tkia. Hashem is the father, Tkia, Trua, Tkia. The call of the master, the first Tkia, looking inwards and rising above ourselves in accordance with the specific flavor of the section of Musaf, right? Malchuyos, Achronos, and Shofros. A call of the judge to self-examination, and the call of the father to renewed life of courage. Paragraph 231. The inner frame of mind, induced by the grievous wasting of one's life, probably not such an amazing frame of mind. Because induced by means the cause is the grievous wasting of one's life. So this is how you feel inside your mind because so much of your life is wasted. Can, however, arrive from two causes. Arise from two causes.
Arise from what?
Two causes. Colon.
Two causes.
Colon.
Yeah.
The first, he doesn't have a one here, but the first one is. The consciousness for the time being of one's unworthiness and of one's powerlessness to rid oneself of it. Or, so the contemplation of one's past unworthy life, which cannot be recalled. You might notice the first one is temporary, the second one is kind of permanent, yeah? The feeling might not be permanent, but the thing is permanent. The first one is, I'm so unworthy, I can't change, I feel like I can't change that. But it's for the time being. The second one was the contemplation of one's past unworthy life, which cannot be recalled. The expression of the first corresponds to one's outcry of physical pain at the first moment of one's experience of it. So when you get hurt, right? You wham your finger. You bang your head hard. There's an outcry of physical pain because it hurts. He says, with regard to Avelos, It's not a lack of emuna or bitachon to cry out because it hurts. It's worth knowing. Especially with regard to judging other people, but even oneself. It just means it hurts. It doesn't mean you don't trust that whatever it is, it was for the best. It just means it hurts. Okay. So that, there's a first outcry of physical pain at the first moment one experiences it. That of the second corresponds to one's expression of pain in the case of a continuous persisting hurt or to some sad event which is lamented, right? A lamentation, like a kino, is not that it happened so much now, but that you continue to grieve over it. Or a chronic pain that keeps on hurting. So I just want to go back. There are two causes of painful inner frame of mind that one will have when they realize that they have grievously wasted one's life. When you look back and you realize, for 3 years, I hardly achieved anything, or I wasted so much time on movies or TV or just sitting around and talking like worthless talk with people or gossiping. Not the avera of it, yeah? But even the loss of the time. What could I have done with 3 years to be working on something positive? I could have achieved so much, right? So there's the first moment of recognizing it. It hurts when that happens. When you look back and you suddenly realize that you did something really wrong and it's behind you. You can't change that. You did it. That hurts. It's a physical kind of pain. And the second one is realizing my past unworthy life can't be recalled. I can't fix it. I can't undo that I did it. You know, 30 years later, to look back at all those years that were, right, I can't take it back. So, like, it's not that I'm having this sudden realization, but this ongoing grief and lamentation and kina over it. The first is groaning, the second whimpering. I'm not sure, like, we're already talking, this is an English translation from a German, and he's really taking it from the Hebrew. And I'm not sure which the words are. It's like the yalala, the bechi, like there's different terms. But maybe you'll help me remember, because you probably have learned this much more recently than I have, and I didn't go and find it. The reason we have different opinions on the sound of the trua. Trua is crying, yeah? So one is that it was the Sisera's mother. The same sound like Sisera's mother when she heard that her son died. And what's the other one? You remember? I can't remember what it is. The source of it. Well, how do we know what the trua should sound like? So one is that it sounds like crying, like Sisera's mother, right? Sisera. Sisera's mother when she heard that he was killed by Yael.
Well, I never heard that. I thought
that's a Gemara.
No, I thought that was like the 100, why we do 100... Because she did.
She it's true. Yeah, but the sound is like the crying of the mother who just found out that she lost her son. That's the sudden loss and pain. And the second one is the whimpering, but I don't remember what the second source is. You remember?
No.
I'm like hoping you'll pop out. Okay, this is really. Okay, or we'll hear a Dvar Torah somewhere over Rosh Hashanah and go like, oh, yeah, that's it. Okay. If that happens, send me an email or call me or something. Okay. So he's showing that these are the different kinds of truas. Yeah? And he's saying that the disagreement, not disagreement, but the different shitas in Chazal over what the trua sounds like is because the question is, which inner frame of mind does the trua represent and call to your mind when you hear it? Does the trua bring to mind the like that sort of like gasping cry of sudden and severe pain? Or is it the longer sort of keening cry that goes on from just ongoing grief that is never fully over, and just when you think it's over, you remember it again? Out of this arose different forms of the broken tone of the trua, namely shvarim, corresponding to the groaning, and trua, corresponding to the whimpering. Later, as a sort of compromise, they were combined, so the three arrangements were prescribed. The combination is shvarim trua, if you combine it together. In the first arrangement, shvarim and trua are combined, with shvarim first in the natural order. In the second arrangement, shvarim alone is sounded, and in the third, trua alone. Okay, so we have these like multiple layers of threes and threes and threes, right? In the Rosh Hashanah structure. So the pattern now is tkiya shvarim trua tkiya, tkiya shvarim trua tkiya, tkiya shvarim trua tkiya. Tkiya shvarim tkiya, tkiya shvarim tkiya, tkiya shvarim tkiya, tkiya trua tkiya, tkiya trua tkiya, tkiya trua tkiya. Each of those is one set of what you have in the upper chart as tkiya trua tkiya. That whole set of what we call 30, right, is a single set of tkiya shvar trua tkiya, or I guess a triple set of it. Okay. For summoning the congregation, as described in Numbers chapter 10, I feel like we have to check everything now. Chatzotros, clarions of silver. Clarion is such a good word compared to trumpet. Right? Like a clarion call.
I'm going to call them clarions.
I should totally call them clarions. It must be like the word clarinet. Clarion is awesome.
That's what it looks like.
That's well, clarion. It doesn't have, I mean, the chatzotzrot are, didn't, I don't think they had any valves. You could control the sound, but it's a one smooth, like,
and what's a clarinet trumpet. Look like?
Clarinet looks like an oboe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bummer. Okay. Yeah. They sound great, but they don't have like disappointing appearance if you're expecting a clarion. Okay. Made by the skilled hand of man were sounded. They were used only for the purpose of outward order in the camp. For the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, however, whose purpose it is to rouse the purely divine in man. Okay. So the purpose of the chatzotzros, and he's a little bit addressing a question. Why are we learning the tkiya shofar from the tkiya of the chatzotzros, which is not shofars? Okay. So he's saying that the chatzotzrot are made by people. It's ma'aseh yedei adam. And what you're calling people to action to is kind of the physical outer world. Like, pack up, stop your work, pack it away, get ready, take the tent down, and be ready to march. Which is not like so much acting on their inner self as like the deeds and the actions of people. But here, for Rosh Hashanah, the purpose is to rouse the purely divine in man. What's the purely divine in man? The Tzelem Elokim, the Neshama. That's what was blown into us on Rosh Hashanah. That's the spiritual thoughts and deeds. Okay, so it's really that which is actually divine, that which is of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaChelek Elokam Imal, that's inside of us, that's what's being called to. So therefore, no artificially constructed piece of work may be sounded. Because it's the divine calling to the divine. It shouldn't be the product of the action of man that's doing the calling. It must be an instrument in its natural form. Shofar, meaning naturally hollow, with life given to it by the breath of man, speaking to the spirit of man. So that I think we touched on it last week. It's a very deep and exciting sort of a thought. We're breathing it out. We're hearing it back in. It's Hashem calling to us. Through, that's a little bit what he hinted to, the voice of your inner self, right? It's a very deep voice within us. You have to search. For you cannot attain to God by artificial means or by artifice. There's no shortcut. There's no quick pill. There's no segula. There's no faking it to get close to Hashem. Could fake it to other people sometimes, but not to him. And no sound, which charms the senses, right? You might say, well, wouldn't it be nicer to blow like flutes? Right? You'd have this, maybe you could have like a few at once. And you would have like harmonies. It could be like very beautiful, right? I mean, people don't pay $100 a ticket to go hear like the LA Philharmonic play one shofar. They want to hear like a lot of instruments and working together. No. No sound which charms the senses, but which does not appeal to man's better self, can raise you to God. If it's not calling straight to the inner self, then it doesn't matter how lovely it is. It's just sort of carry you along with the loveliness of it. Indeed, you might surrender yourself again to your low base way of living. You let the music carry you off to just, it feels so nice. So whatever low base thing that feels nice right now, so you go with that. The pure, unaffected sound of the natural shofar should stir your heart and mind and attune them. Stir means like stir them up, awaken them, and attune them to the significance and the call of its tones. All naturally hollow horns of clean animals, clean meaning tahor over here, not clean, are valid for the shofar of Rosh Hashanah, except the horn of the bull, which is linked with the memory, sad for our nation, of the sin of the golden calf, and which in fact is not called shofar. One should take, if possible, the bent horn of a ram, bent in conformity with the contrite mood of the day evoked by the trua. So the trua is bent over in pain, is bent over in the opposite of pride, maybe some shame for having done the wrong thing, right? You don't stand up like all straight and proud. So the bentness of the shofar, since it's the vehicle of the voice of the divine, calling to the divine inside of us and awakening up also where we're wrong, all fits together. Of a ram, because it preserves the noble memory of Avraham's sacrifice, meaning the Akedah, the prototype in history of subservience of self to God. The pitch of the tone does not matter. A perforated horn is valid if another is not available. So if there's a crack or a hole, it could still be kosher. If it has been stopped up with raw material and the larger part remains undamaged, and after the repair, the tone of the shofar is restored, it is valid. Cracks along the length may be fused together again by fire. If one side is split through, the shofar is quite useless. If it is split across the breadth more than halfway, and there are not four thumb widths from the split to the mouthpiece, the shofar is invalid. One must blow directly into the shofar. The shofar may be blown at any time, from sunrise, and in case of necessity, from daybreak. So you could have situations where it's not, you don't have the luxury of just being in shul and hours and blowing whenever. So it could be much earlier. If Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos, the blowing of the shofar does not take place, but the lesson of the trua concept in Malchios, Zechornos, and Shofaros remains. Listening to and taking to heart the message of the tones are, of course, the essence of the mitzvah. The blowing of the shofar should be done with the view to fulfilling the mitzvah. And both the one who blows the shofar and the one who listens must have the intention, the one to assist every listener to fulfill his obligation, and the other to fulfill his. The sound of the tekiah and the trua are of the same length. Trua, 9 of the smallest staccato notes. Shvarim, 3 longer ones. Tekiah, a gradually rising sound of the duration of 9 small staccato notes. Okay, so really, each one is the same length of time. A tekiah and a trua, or a tekiah and a shvarim, are the same length. A shvarim trua is longer. They are sounded in the order tashrat, so tekiah, shvarim, trua, tekiah, for the length of 18 staccato notes. Because the shvarim and the trua are longer. The shvarim trua together, each one is 9 notes long, so it's 18. The shofar is blown in the above-mentioned order after Kriyas HaTorah, before Mosaf. When the cantor, the chazan, repeats the Mosaf and comes to the conclusion of each one of the three sets of brachos, this could depend on the nusach that you daven, namely, Malchios, Zechronos, and Shofros. He must blow the shofar each time. Also, not always does the chazan blow the shofar in our shuls. Sounding one set of notes, either tashrat each time, or the first time tashrat, the second tashrat. There's more than one order. Sometimes they only do Tashrat, 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 Tashrat. And the next time around, Tarat, 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 like that. But some, they do a mix of them each time. It would be most appropriate to sound each time. In other words, this is his psak, is that that would be the preferred way. All further details are explained in Or HaChaim. Do you notice how when he does halacha, which we mostly haven't done with him, he does it sort of like either at the end or in the middle, so that you could sort of see how the concept of the mitzvah drives the halachas of the mitzvah? Isn't that interesting? He does it with everything. Where like he'll tell you like the principle and then like show you how the halachas themselves are a function of the principles, which is like really cool.
Do that on purpose also to sort of like slip it in.
It's for sure on purpose.
So that people won't know, like...
Oh, they won't get overwhelmed by the halacha?
Yeah, like, I don't know
if I don't know if it's that people shouldn't notice, because that would be typical of, like, the environment. But I think it's not so much that you wouldn't notice,
but like
that you now, you appreciate the halacha, right, rather than like, what are all these mitzvahs about? All the details, who cares? Because he's like... addressing basically modern people, right? Now, by the time you get to the halachos, it's exciting. It's like, oh, that's so neat that it's that way.
Right.
Because you understand that there's like deeper meaning to it. Whereas if...
That's what I was...
Yeah, I think... No, I think that's why he wrote the book, I think.
Right, right.
I think that's what Horev is for.
Not least slipping it in, but like, so once he already talked... It's not like he's going
to
start off...
He wants to teach you Torah in a way... that you're so uplifted and energized and galvanized that you can't wait to do it.
Even if there's all these mitzvahs. Like, even if...
Even, right, that's specifically, like, there are these mitzvahs and you just can't wait to do them,
right,
and be part of something so much grander and beyond the greatness of your own little self.
Yeah.
And you could attach yourself to that for eternity. And it's just raises you up with, like... a kind of potential that you never maybe thought you could have, that you could be a person attached to things like that. And he, that's the ultimate more and Torah, right? Like, to show you a way that you could become a trajectory of something so much more high and great than you ever thought you could be. And really, it's the calling, it's that kol shofar, the call to us at Horev, right? At Har Sinai, saying, attend to Yuli Mamleches Kohanim, V'goy Kadosh, and Hashem called us to him. And we just like a little bit don't hear the voice of that shofar, which keeps reverberating through all these generations. We didn't realize, we're not tuned in on that frequency. So he's helping you get your radio tuned to keep hearing that call of a shofar that's like continues to be like holeich through the world, calling to Klal Yisrael and saying, come, come, come. Like, there's something great that you can be and become. And I don't know, what we're being offered to be. And I guess he understood that, and he's trying to share that excitement so that we don't have to look back and see a grievous wasting of life. And we only realize when it's really late. It's never too late, I suppose, but that shouldn't be late. All right. Thank you. So what's the story? Are we going to be able to keep? We're getting very close to seminary time. Let's turn this off.